This episode sponsored by We Feed Raw. Your dog deserves better than ultra-processed food every single day. That's why there's We Feed Raw. The highest quality meat, nutrient-rich organs, complete and balanced meals formulated by animal nutrition experts. No fillers, no artificial preservatives, just real food dogs are biologically built to eat. And when dogs eat better, people usually notice it. Better digestion, healthier skin and coats, more energy, more excitement at mealtime. Meals are delivered right to the door and portioned for each dog's needs. Real food made simple. Visit WeFeedRaw.com to get started and see today's best offer.
This is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
The headlines from London, The Telegraph. Very good connection to the Ministry of Defense. Iran ordered Hezbollah to attack border, says Israel. Also, Israel will, quote, destroy Lebanon if war spreads. Also, Israel preparing to deploy laser missile defenses. Also, Hassan Nasrallah, the boss of the Hezbollah, is one man capable of igniting a wider war in the Middle East, says The Telegraph. I welcome Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, writing about these matters in the last days, looking at the war in Europe, the war in the Middle East, the Belt and Road Initiative underway in Beijing, 130 countries looking to continue their relationship with the money coming out of Beijing. One of those countries is Russia, we're told. Mr. Putin will attend. Mr. Lavrov, the foreign minister, has already been seen shaking hands and smiling broadly with Yang Yi, the foreign minister of the People's Republic of China. And yet we turn again to the conflict in the Middle East, the fresh conflict, total fog of war. I read the headlines in The Telegraph. That's all we can do. Gregory, you explicate that the Hamas provocation and war aids Beijing, the People's Republic of China. How so? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. The reality is that the war in Ukraine is winding down, largely because Western allied support for Ukraine is starting to diminish, and there's a demand for a negotiated settlement, which President Zelensky is probably unwilling to do. But nonetheless, we are seeing this diminished support for Ukraine in this war. It's critical, as far as Beijing is concerned, that the U.S. and its Western allies, particularly the U.K., be continually preoccupied with the Euro-Atlantic space. They need that to keep U.S. and allied forces out of the Indo-Pacific, where they really would pose a massive curtailment, if you like, on Beijing's plans to deal with Taiwan by one means or another. So the start of another conflict, if you like, to take up where Ukraine leaves off, was clearly a desire of Beijing's. And Beijing has strong influence on that through Iran and perhaps directly, and it's certainly in Russia's interest as well, for pressure to come off the Ukraine front. But for Beijing, it's critical, and it's critical until the November summit in San Francisco, at which Xi and President Biden are due to meet. And there they hope to come up with a win-win situation, which will save face for both President Biden and General Secretary Xi, and perhaps cause it to tone down its rhetoric on an immediate attack on Taiwan. So the Beijing people want to see a continued distraction until that time at least. So there's no question that they're going to continue to inflame in the Gaza situation until that time. There's no other explanation offered for the breakout by Hamas against Israel at such a scale and in such a deliberately provocative fashion, with the mass killings of women and children in such a brutal and public fashion, other than to stir up a great Israeli response, which is, of course, coming because the Israelis are were humiliated by their lack of intelligence on this issue and are basically responding viscerally against both Hamas and against the possibility of Hezbollah joining into that attack. So essentially, you've got a situation which is playing into the hands of Beijing and to a degree to Moscow. We see not only the Gerald Ford carrier strike group with its six Aegis destroyers coming in to offer support for Israel, but the Eisenhower carrier strike group coming in to eventually replace the Ford group. You've got the Royal Navy, Royal Air Force, and Royal Marines offering support in there as well, particularly to extricate foreign nationals over to Cyprus, and that process is beginning now. So it's a clear win for Beijing. Hamas must have been induced by some offers to make such a suicidal breakout, because they don't have any long-term capability to occupy or further influence the situation against Israel. Yes, they had a logical reason for going in. It's the 50th anniversary of the October 1973 war, which is being celebrated as a half century of peace by the Israelis and others. And the Palestinians feel that, of course, it wasn't a half century of peace or progress for them. You also had the situation with the Israel-Saudi normalization process, which was well underway, which would be which would also further sideline the Palestinians as being losing any influence in the region, and also would dramatically impact Iran, which sees Israel as its principal potential military threat, and now you have Israel and Saudi Arabia getting together and sharing more strategic planning for, potentially. The reality is that Israel and Saudi Arabia have long been in communication on this issue, but nonetheless, Iran doesn't want to see that progressed any further. So you've got some logical local reasons for Hamas to do a breakout, but it's hardly logical that Hamas would commit suicide on that account. So it's there are greater issues at play here.
The threat from the north, the war of the north, has been a topic for many years. I know we've discussed it with on the show. We've discussed it. I've discussed it with people from Israel, think tankers from Israel. Hezbollah has a great number of missiles, some of which have been augmented with precision targeting. They also have a military force that is competent to withstand, at least initially, the Israeli assault if it were to come. And then there is Syria, where there are elements of the IRGC present and other bad actors. So the war in the north is much more threatening. And now this talk about Hezbollah ordered to attack, is that bluff, Gregory? How do you hear that, Iran being so public about itself as a driver of conflict?
Well, Iran knows that it has to be very careful because it can't afford a significant escalation to nuclear levels, where there would be a nuclear exchange between what is already a nuclear-capable Iranian missile force and Israel, which we know to be a nuclear power. So Iran has been cautious on this. It said it had nothing to do with the Hamas breakout, but it's now positioning itself to say, well, you know, if there's an attack on Lebanon, then Hezbollah has to respond. We have to bear in mind that Turkey has also been actively involved in this, because Hamas and its parent, the Muslim Brotherhood, have offices in Turkey, and Turkey's AKP government is itself a Muslim Brotherhood government. So these are all factors. So Turkey and Iran were clearly knowledgeable of and complicit in the Hamas breakout, and must have had plans for a follow-on capability. The question is, regardless of the improved accuracy of Iranian missiles now in the hands of Hezbollah and IRGC forces, Pashtun forces in the region, the David Sling and Iron Dome defensive systems, anti-ballistic missile systems, are proving extremely capable. And there's not even a guarantee that an Iranian-launched ballistic missile with a nuclear warhead could get through. So that could invoke an escalation which Iran could not handle. And, of course, the presence of the Aegis destroyer cruiser vessels in the Eastern Mediterranean adds another layer of defense against longer-range ballistic missiles, MRBMs, medium-range ballistic missiles, coming out of Iran towards Israel. That could certainly cope with that, in addition to the Iron Dome and David Sling systems which are in place.
2006 was the war that I recall vividly as seen as a failure of the IDF to achieve its missions in Lebanon. That was a provocation by Hezbollah with missiles that were much less accurate than the ones said to be in possession now. The Israeli forces did go into Lebanon and were frustrated with the way the Hezbollah resisted, with elements of the IRGC aiding them. So that would look to be deeply troubling for the Jerusalem administration, Gregory, if they were to be drawn into Lebanon. Nasrallah, if Gaza is a tough one to challenge, Beirut would be massively, overwhelmingly challenging. There would be no advantage to Israel to go into Lebanon. Do you agree?
Well, as I say, no advantage. I think it would be difficult, and I think it's behooves Israel to respond carefully rather than instinctively to both of these threats. Even going into Gaza would require massive urban warfare capabilities, and I know the IDF has unique, and I stress unique, capabilities in urban warfare. It's nonetheless extremely costly and difficult, and does not necessarily result in an ultimate clear victory. There's no way that at this stage Israel can actually eliminate all of Hamas or all of Hezbollah. The question has got to lie in something more strategic than that. And what we have to see now is some evidence of Israeli strategic planning instead of this tactical response, which is so dear to the heart of the Prime Minister right now.
Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. We're looking at what we know, fog of war descending on the Middle East war. When we come back, what's in it for the U.S.? Where is NATO in this conversation about two wars and trouble in Africa, trouble in Asia? Certainly, we don't leave out the South Caucasus, which are very tense after the conflict recently, where Azerbaijan recovered Nagorno-Karabakh, and the Armenians living in Nagorno-Karabakh exited in a spectacularly grim fashion, not unlike the evacuation from Gaza. What does this mean for the U.S. foreign policy? Stretched to its limits? Question mark. I'm John Bash.